Welcome to PCMC Pop Culture Man Children. I'm your host, Mike Bongiorno. I'm here today with my good friend and your close acquaintance, Mr. Peter Marsh.
It's true. Dude, I don't think there is a more specific Pop Culture Man Children episode for me to be on than this one. This one is like made for me.
Yes. And this is the episode that makes an honest man out of me, because the Pop Culture Man Children logo has Optimus Prime in it, but we've never done a Transformers episode. When the artist Chris Sorrentino made the logo, he just, you know, he put in shit from the 80s and stuff. There's a She-Ra in there and stuff, but then there's Optimus Prime, and I gotta be honest, I was not a Transformers kid. So yeah. I don't know, my heart was so full of He-Man and Ghostbusters and Ninja Turtles. I don't know, there was no room for Transformers, but I know you were a Transformers kid and a Transformers adult.
Yes, you know, we're in my apartment right now, and if you look at the shelves over there, I mean, obviously this is a podcast, not a YouTube video, but I have like two shelves filled with Transformer toys where they're almost like going to make the shelves fall.
Nice. You know,
there's so many Transformers on them. Yeah, yeah. I love them. I love the comics. I don't really like the live action movies, which I'm sure we'll talk about in a little bit. But the movie that we're going to talk about today is my favorite movie of all time. So.
Incredible. So we're talking about the Transformers, the movie. I personally would have dropped one of the "the's," but the Transformers, the movie from 1986, directed by Nelson Shin, written by Robert Friedman. This is the first Transformers movie, an animated movie that came out in 1986. This is your favorite movie of all time. Did you see it in theaters?
I did not.
No, you would have been like, what, 4 or whatever, right?
Yeah.
So what's your history with this movie?
So, like you just said, you know, I was a 4-year-old when the movie came out. So at this point, it probably would have taken about a year for it to go on to VHS. So that'd be 1987 then, and I'd be 5 years old. I watched the cartoon, you know, on TV whenever I could. And then there was always reruns. And you become very attached to some of these characters. You love these characters. You know, the way the cartoon worked, there'd be episodes where there's multiple characters from both sides. And then there'd be episodes where it's like focusing on pretty much like one or two good guys or bad guys. And you start to develop favorites. You buy toys that match up with which one's your favorite. Yeah. And then you watch this movie and you just watch them get slaughtered in horrible ways, you know?
Yeah, there's a couple of, like, you know, one of the, I guess, most well-known things about this movie was that Transformers, like Masters of the Universe and like Care Bears and like a lot of things in the 80s, were like, you know, there were toy lines. And these were ways of advertising the toy lines. So the thought was, although I want to investigate this a little bit, but the supposedly what happened was Hasbro, the company that made the toys, or licensed the toys from Japan, said, you know, like, we want to bring out all new toys, so let's clear the deck and get rid of some of the original characters. But what that means is you have a Transformers movie where the characters that all the children love and care about get brutally, and in some cases brutally, murdered on screen.
Yep.
I'm not even – so I was not a Transformers fan as a kid, and I never watched the animated series. But even that, even so, when I watched this movie, which I watched it twice this week, I was surprised with stakes. Like, so one of the things with Saturday morning cartoons, right, is that there's almost never stakes. Like, people will shoot at each other, but it'll go over your head. Something will blow up, but instead of you dying, like, it'll just, the explosion will just shoot you back a little bit. And this, immediately people shooting at each other and dying. And, like, the stakes are just incredibly high for this kind of movie. I can't imagine what the experience must have been like.
Yeah, it's crazy, because one of my favorite characters, my favorite Transformer, is just like obliterated in this movie. And it's a moment where they like really focus on it. It almost like is in slow motion.
Who's and your favorite one?
Starscream.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Yes, he does die in a wild way, and like a tragically ironic way. Like he finally gets what he wants, and then he's fucking like killed and like disintegrates into nothing.
It's really rough. I mean, the animation for this movie is obviously better than the animation for the cartoon that was on every week, right?
Incredible.
And for certain sequences, it feels okay, we live in such a different world than the world of 1986, right? Like,
Sure.
you know, when I was like, I don't know, 10 or 11, I saw Akira for the first time, and it
Yeah.
was like watching porn because, like, anime back then, you just like someone would have like a VHS tape that
Yeah.
they found, or you know, someone gave it to them. It wasn't like just available anywhere, everywhere, you know.
Yeah.
And so, like watching Akira, I was like, I can't believe this is a cartoon. And this movie, I wouldn't say the animation's on the level of Akira, but it is certainly significantly better than the original cartoon. And so, like, Starscream's death is like this example where like the camera is, it's just like hyper focused on his face as
Yeah.
he slowly dies, and it just like kind of goes over his body as it just disintegrates into ash. It's like such a beautiful, well-drawn shot scene, but then like it's also like, oh, there's your favorite character just gone completely.
Yeah. I recently watched Akira for the podcast. But I mean, I had seen it before, but I rewatched it. And yeah, like when I was watching this, I was thinking about Akira because there's, people say anime style, which is kind of a misnomer in a way because anime, there's lots of different styles. And 80s anime is very different from anime now because 80s anime was really labored drawn. There was no CGI helping out at all. There were no shortcuts. Everything feels bespoke and everything feels like somebody had to like put in the physical effort of drawing it all. And like the opening of this that begins with Unicron, and Unicron comes across the screen and almost like the Star Destroyer in Star Wars, we sort of quickly like pan across its surface. And then we see, I mean, the whole cold open is Unicron coming down to a planet, and we see the people of the planet or the robots of the planet. And it's like this cool looking, like bluish pastel kind of planet. And then kind of like Krypton, like we see it be destroyed and the people be sucked. Even it's incredible animation, but it's also like extremely dark for like this a cold open. It's really striking. As a kid, when you watched it on VHS, were you like, what is happening?
You know, it's weird to think about how I felt as a kid watching this, because you're watching something kind of horrible, but you watch it so many times over and over again, you're like, oh yeah, this is that horrible part. This is that part
Yeah.
that you know it's kind of wrong. It's funny because, you know, I've watched this movie many, many times, and I watched it just, you know, like last week. I watched it with this woman that I'm dating, and you know, she's like, oh,
Is that
that's
like
so.
your litmus test? Like, I've got to show you the 1986 The Transformers the movie, and if you don't like it, this is over.
I mean, like, I think that if she had been like disinterested, I would have thought to myself, oh, there could be problems down the line.
You need to
But
roll out of this apartment right now.
there you go. There you go. Nice. No, she actually was really into it. She really liked Grimlock a lot, and she started like quoting it. So I'm like, okay, I think she's a keeper. But like watching this movie, she's like, oh, look, it's so cute. There's little children robots, you know, they're cute.
Yeah.
And then I'm thinking to myself, oh, you have no idea
Don't
what's
get
about to
attached to these robots.
happen. And so, you know, it's funny too, because I said to her, I was like, I want you to watch this, and I want you to see what two patterns are really important for this movie. Like, what are two patterns that are throughout this movie? And she couldn't figure it out right away, so I had to tell her. But you know, we'll talk about those patterns in a minute. But this scene is a great example of one of them, you know, because you the it. Like, here's the thing, right? With Transformers in general, because they're robots, they can do anything to them. They
Yes.
can And so, like, they, and it's way worse in the comics, where they just do the most horrific stuff that if it was a book or a show where it was human people and this stuff was being done to them, it would be like X-rated.
Right, that's true, yeah.
And I think this movie is rated PG,
Right.
and like there's no way it would have a PG rating if it was people. It'd be like X.
Right, if you dropped people into a like a pool of sharks that ate them alive, it wouldn't be PG, but you get away with things because they're at, like in the way the Ninja Turtles animated series, they made the Foot Clan robots.
Right,
So they
right.
could just murder the Foot Clan left and right, and you'd supposedly have no feelings about it.
Right.
So yeah, I really want I'm interested in the two patterns that you've seen, but I'm also interested in like, when did you realize this was your favorite movie? What was there a time in your life when you were like in college where you're like, no, my favorite movie is Citizen Kane, and then you came back to this and you were like, no, I have to be honest. Like, what's that journey?
Man, oh man, dude, this episode, oh God, I feel like I'm at like a massage parlor or something. Yeah, no, of course. Like when I was like 15 or 16, I was like, I can't read comics anymore. Girls aren't going to be attracted to me, so I stopped reading comics. And then when I was 18, I started working at Walden Books in the mall, and I started working with my friend Brian. That's where I met him. And Brian and I, when you're at Walden Books, you can take out comics. Like you can take out any book and like just rent it so that you can
Wow.
recommend books to people. Yeah, it was fucking awesome. You could rent like 3 books a week from the bookstore. So that's actually how I got back into comics. I just would take out comic book trades, just read them, and just essentially catch up on everything I missed and everything that was coming out at the moment. And then like, I was 18, now I'm 43, and I've just been like constantly reading comics. So part of that friendship with Brian was realizing that he also loved Transformers when he was a kid. He hadn't bought any in years. And then we just sort of started to be into Transformers again. And then we're like, oh man, do you want to watch the movie again? And then we did. And I remember, this movie is set in the year 2005. And I remember he used to have these great New Year's parties, and he had this playing, then. And that might have been when I was like, oh yeah, this is my favorite movie of all time. But I have like specific criteria that makes me put a movie on my top 10 list, or makes me say it's an amazing movie. And this movie like fits that criteria to a T,
All right, let's go through it a little bit. It's very action oriented, so it's not like extremely heavy plot. It's very action oriented. It's a Dino De Laurentiis production, and Sunbow, who did a lot of 80s like Saturday morning animation, and Marvel. People don't realize before Marvel Studios was making Marvel movies, it existed making animation. Muppet Babies was a Marvel show. Oh, let me ask you. So this is between season two and three of the show. All right. So is this like years after season two? Is it a time jump?
There's a time jump for the movie, right? Because the show, the seasons one and two takes place in the modern day, which would have been like 1985, right? And so it jumps 20 years into the future for the movie.
That alone is a weird choice. Was that off-putting as a kid?
It was a little confusing, right? Because there's human characters in the show, there's human characters in the movie, and so this one guy, Spike, who's like their little human sidekick in the show, all of a sudden he is like a full-grown adult with like a wife and a kid, and you're like, oh, okay, wait, what's going on? It was confusing,
Is Spike related to Shia LaBeouf's character in the
Spike, they call him Sam, like, but his name is Spike Witwicky in the cartoon, and then it's Sam Witwicky in the movie, and they're completely different,
You know what's interesting? For the general public, right? I think when you say Transformers now in 2025, the thing that'll probably jump into the head first is the Michael Bay live action movies, which I don't even remember. What are they, like five or six or something?
I mean, there's more than that, right? The Michael Bay ones, there's five, but then there's even more after Michael Bay now at this point.
Okay. But for like Transformers fans like yourself, that's not like the most important stuff, right? Like, and it's just interesting that the sort of like of the iceberg, the tip on the top is like kind of like not something that Transformers fans love that much.
Yes.
So the easy answer, right, would be that Transformers should have less humans. Do you think that that's true, or do you think that's oversimplifying what the issue is with those movies?
Yeah, the greatest, most distilled version of Transformers, the one where it's like, this is the best, this is fucking incredible, has like no humans in it whatsoever. And I'm talking about Transformers in the comic book form. Before I talked about how it's just so brutal and violent what they do to the robots, like British people, or at least British men, seem to love Transformers, right? And so there was a Marvel comic that was made in the United States, and then there was a British Marvel comic of Transformers that was its own thing. And they did horrific things to Transformers there, but they seem to inspire a lot of British comic book writers, these Transformers comics. And so the best Transformers media of all time is at the moment is a comic by a guy named James Roberts, who would you know wrote this comic Transformers More Than Meets the Eye. And it's just a phenomenal book, and it has no humans in it whatsoever. It's in space.
Yeah, because the Michael Bay movies are human centric. Have you seen all those Michael Bay movies?
Yeah, of course.
I saw the first one and I liked it. I was like, this isn't bad. And
Right.
then I saw part of the second one and I felt it was really racist. There were like those weird like little jive talking
Yep.
Transformers. And then I didn't watch again until Bumblebee. And
Right.
Bumblebee, I kind of like. I think the last act of it turns too much into a Michael Bay movie. But
Yes.
the beginning on Cybertron is pretty awesome. And then the whole, like, it's kind of like E.T. with Bumblebee. That's probably the best of the live action ones for me.
Yeah, it's the
But.
best of live action ones for me too. And then as far as like the best live action Transformers moment, it's that opening in Bumblebee. Like that's the best thing that I've seen in live action. And it's on Cybertron with no humans, right?
And what it's like, you kind of feel like this is what it could have been.
Yeah, exactly.
But you know, to tip our hand a little bit, next week we're going to talk about Transformers One, which is the new animated movie. That's probably my favorite Transformers thing. Like, I just rewatched it again and I was like, this movie's really good.
It is really good, yeah. But this one still, the one we're talking about today, is by far my
So,
favorite.
this movie has some celebrity voices in it.
Yeah.
You've got Orson Welles in his last role. He died 5 days after recording this, and he's almost dying when he's recording it. They had to do a lot of post, you know, work with the to make it sound, because he apparently he was out of breath. You know, he was so ill health, so he's kind of like, you have to get the matrix of the matrix of leadership. So they had to, like, you know, do a lot of shit, but I really like it. It makes the performance like there's a I don't give a shit probably in Orson Welles' mind about the project. So
Yes.
I feel like it works for Unicron to be talking to Megatron without really any concern or fear of this person. It
Yeah.
works very well. Then you've got Leonard Nimoy, Judd Nelson, who was a star at the time. By the way, Hot Rod, right? Or Rodimus Prime. Is he the star of season three of the show?
Yeah, he's the leader in the third
Okay.
season. Yeah.
Does it remain Judd Nelson, or they change it to some other voice actor?
No, all the like celebrity guest voices are replaced by like the typical people that were on the show at that point. Like if we're talking about voice cast members, we should talk about probably the most important voice cast members, which you have Peter Cullen, who's Optimus Prime, right? And then you have what's his name? Frank Welker is Megatron, right? And Frank Welker as Megatron, that's an amazing, I mean, Optimus Prime, obviously, that's like most iconic, right? But Frank Welker as Megatron is almost as close as iconic as Optimus Prime. He becomes Galvatron, and it's a different take on the voice. Like he has this different take. And the way they kind of write that off in the cartoon is that like Galvatron lost his mind after he was thrown out of Unicron at the end. So he has a totally different voice by season three.
See, I as a just as a viewer of the film, right? I found that a little off-putting. Like, because Megatron has a voice, and yes, he changes his body's broken and then he changes, but then all of a sudden he's Leonard Nimoy, and it's like it should always have, like, having the same voice would make it feel like the same character in a way. I found it very weird. I don't know. It felt like didn't make sense to me.
That sequence, I mean, we're kind of jumping all over the place, but the sequence where Megatron and a few of the other Decepticons are turned into Galvatron and Cyclonus and Scourge, and they're like completely reimagined from the inside out. I remember that having some kind of effect on me. Like when you watch things as a kid, right? Like if you see like a sex scene, if you see something like brutally violent, you don't really know how to like interpret it as a kid. You feel weird and you're like, I don't really get this. Or I know this is something that like adults understand, but like you just don't really know how to feel. And so when that moment comes up, you get that kind of almost like goosebumps feeling in your body. And that make that scene where Unicron changes them always had that effect on me,
Interesting. Let me ask you this. When you first watched it and Optimus dies, right? 30 minutes into it or whatever. Did you think he's gonna come back? Were you watching the whole rest of the movie assuming he's gonna come back?
It's such a weird thing because I can't remember the initial like, oh, I watched this and this is how I felt. It's more like I watched it over and over again so many times. I'm like, oh, this is the part where Optimus dies and it's sad. I don't think I like cried or anything like that. But I did not think he was going to come back when it happened. Like it was even back then as a kid, I was like, oh, he's giving that thing to someone. He's essentially like done. He's given the Matrix to Ultra Magnus. So it's like, oh, okay, he's done. He's like passed the torch. This is what's going to happen to me when I die. I'm going to take a Matrix out of my chest and give it to my child.
So you watch this v on VHS. I
I
know
did.
that some versions, after the movie came out and there was a little bit of a stir, there were some versions that ended with a voiceover, or at least or a title that said Optimus Prime will return. Did your VHS have that?
My VHS did not have that. No,
Okay,
no.
okay. So you didn't even
Yeah.
have that relief of okay.
And what's funny is that I don't know like which company this was, right? Because you said Sunbow and then you said Marvel and stuff. I remember seeing those credits every time I'd watch the movie. But then there was like another company that they had a logo for them in the beginning of the movie on VHS, and it would show Bambi like eating some grass in the forest, and then Godzilla's foot stepped on Bambi and like crushed him.
Oh, that's a famous, that's weird. That's a famous student film. You could find it on YouTube. I wonder why that was on your VHS. That's crazy.
Yeah, that would always happen right before the movie. And like even me, like I was like, oh, that feels wrong. There's something weird about this. And that's the way like it goes like from that to just Unicron floating through space and then that massive genocide,
The 2005, which is as today is 20 years ago. So yeah, let's do a little bit of the plot. So it's 20 years after season two, and Cybertron, the planet of the Transformers, is completely taken over by the villains, which is itself as a kind of striking right there at the beginning. The good guys, the Autobots, are operating from I guess three bases, one on each of the two moons that are surround Cybertron, and one base on Earth. And they are getting ready to strike the planet and try to take back their planet, but a spy hears them. So the villain Megatron is like, well, let's brutally murder them. And as one of the shuttles is on its way, I guess, two, I don't know, I guess two Cybertron. You're gonna have to help me with the names. Some characters come in that shuttle and they like break it open and they come in and just start shooting people. And
The
that's
second
our
part.
first deaths that we have.
Yes. So you got Decepticons and the Autobots, right? Decepticons are the bad guys, Autobots are the good guys. And when you watch the cartoon, you also have to remember, like, your brain's not fully developed. Like, you're not necessarily like
No.
picking out all the details and knowing everything. So it's sort of ambiguous and a little bit confusing, like the stakes and what's happening in the cartoon. It's always like, okay, the good guys are going to fight the bad guys, the good guys are going to win. That happens every week, right? But as far as like, are the Decepticons like greatly outnumbering the Autobots? Are they more powerful? Have they conquered Cybertron? That's always a little bit confusing when you're watching the show as a little kid. And then
Sure.
all of a sudden, this movie's like, no, the bad guys won. And they're like,
Yeah.
the Autobots are almost like a resistance against them. They were like much more evenly matched in the cartoon, the TV show.
Yeah. It's a crazy setup. So who dies in that first scene there?
That's really rough. So on the shuttle, you have a guy that turns into a police car. His name's Prowl. He is the one when he gets shot. I mean, I always remember this. When he gets shot, like fucking like fiery smoke comes out of his mouth and his eyes light up and then they dim. And I just always remember that. Then there's Brawn. He's actually the first one that dies. Like what happens is the Decepticons just break into the shuttle. They're in space. They break into the shuttle. It's not like everyone gets sucked out. They all just kind of stand around and shoot each other. And Megatron, it's such an amazing moment because Megatron says, "Die, Autobots," which it's like you don't really talk about death in the cartoon. You'd say like, "Get destroyed" or
And
something.
one of them's like half dead and is like, please help me. And he just fucking just executes him.
It's amazing. That's Ironhide. That's a character that was on the show like all the time,
Like
and
a
it's.
little kid's got their Ironhide toy and they're watching it in the theater. And he
Yes.
gets executed while begging for his life.
It's an amazing sequence because Megatron's standing over him. He's not even paying attention to him. He's talking to Starscream, and then Ironhide kind of grabs at his leg, like pathetically, like, no. And Megatron just blasts him, and you just sort of see the smoke from the blast, like, fly up into the camera and the shuttle pass over. But
Incredible.
one thing, and then also Ratchet, who's like the medic on the team, he's another one that gets taken out in that scene too, right? So like what we should talk about, this is one of the patterns right here, and this is very, very important to this scene, is one of the patterns is they'll play a song that's not like the score, they'll play like a metal song.
Of course, yeah.
And this is why I love this movie so
It's
much.
metal
It
as fuck, this movie.
truly is.
And
And
it
you know,
looks like heavy metal. It looks like the heavy metal magazine, the art style, that like Mobius look.
And I mean, like, the easiest, like, low-hanging fruit joke here is like, it's metal as fuck. Everyone's fucking made of metal. The planet is made of metal, right? But what I was gonna say though, and I think this also influences my musical taste too, because I'm a huge metal fan, right? Is that to me, I feel like the highest form of human expression is film. And I feel like
Wow,
when
okay.
you're able to sync the imagery in a movie with the music, with the score, you can create something that's like almost like transcendent. Like I'm like, oh, this is like kind of like the peak experience when like music and imagery are like in complete sync with each other. And I feel like this movie, the music, like this is the best example of music syncing up with imagery that I've seen in my life.
Yeah, the movie has a lot of montage with music, almost like music video kind of stuff. And I guess the most famous song is The Touch.
The touch, yes.
Which if you ever saw Boogie Nights, when Dirk Diggler tries to have a music career, he covers The Touch. And there's also a really great cover of the theme song that the movie
Yes.
begins with. And like you see Cybertron eat this planet, and it's this horrible cold opening. And then, like, you hear like the drums coming. It's like bum 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 bum. And so it's kind of like, holy shit, here we go.
Right. It is incredible. And I mean, that's where it's at, man. That's why I was obsessed with this movie as a kid. That's why the nostalgia is like so strong. It's because of the music. It's because every scene. Like the other thing that makes a movie go on my top 10 list, that makes me love a movie, say it's one of my favorite movies, is if I'm watching a scene and I'm like, oh, this scene's about to come on, and I'm excited that the next scene, like, oh, the scene's coming on. And that's what this whole movie is. It's like, oh, it's this scene. Oh, it's this scene. You know? And then the music cues are like, they're like, oh, hear that chord, that guitar chord, it's gonna be this part, you know?
So okay, so getting back into it, the after the plane, right? Now this now the no, they weren't going to submarine, they were going to Earth, because now
Decepticon.
Decepticons are on the shuttle, and we see Earth, and we meet Hot Rod, who I gotta say is very cool looking. I've heard that his toy was not that good, but I love his like pink and like bright orange. And he's like fishing with Dan, who's this little boy who's Spike's son. So they're on Earth, and then the shuttle's coming, and Dan's like, I wanna go see the shuttle. He gets on the touch starts to play, and he gets on like a Back to the Future 2 like hoverboard. And but then I guess Hot Rod realizes, he sees that it's like destroyed, or there's a hole in it, and he realizes that these are the bad guys like sneaking into their base, and he starts shooting at the, and then Cup, who's an older guy, is like, what the fuck is he doing? And then again, just more brutal shit, like they land and they fight, and they really like decimate fucking the Earth base. We meet some of the other characters, some of the other, I guess, I'm guessing a lot of these characters that we meet here on Earth are new to us.
Yes, that is 100% correct. So one thing I want to clarify too is that the touch isn't playing in that sequence. It's a song called Dare,
No.
and they play this song twice too. They play it at the very end as well. They play the touch twice in the movie as well, but that's in the probably the most famous scene of the movie, and that's coming up too. But that sequence that you're talking about, it's so good because they essentially play like the whole song of Dare, and it starts off with like Daniel's on this like hoverboard skateboard thing at first, and like as a kid you're like, oh my god, that's so cool just seeing that, and he immediately messes up, he immediately like just crashes into a boulder and goes flying like he's gonna die, right? And then Hot Rod scoops him up and he says this cheesy ass line, but it's like so good when you're a kid, where he's like, if you're gonna ride, ride in style, and he like throws the kid up in the air and then becomes a fucking sports car, and then he falls in him and he drives. And I feel like the music is so good in that sequence when Hot Rod shoots the shuttle, the Decepticons fly out, and the music gets real like tense, like, oh my god, you know what's gonna happen. And then there's a character called Blitzwing who's a triple changer. He can turn into two different alt modes. That's when they turn into vehicles, and then he's a robot, so he's a triple changer. And he becomes a tank, and the scope like focuses on Hot Rod. Then Cup, who was kind of like, oh, this kid's an asshole, he like shows up and shows he's a badass because he like drives, he transforms into a robot, pulls the cannon up, it shoots over Hot Rod, then hits an Insecticon behind him. I like, dude, I'm almost getting an erection just talking about this.
No, this movie's pure energy. We meet Ultra Magnus, RC, who at the time was the first female transformer. Of course, she's pink. Blur is voiced by an 80s icon named John Machida Jr. His bit, right, was that he could talk really fast. Although I would argue that's not really true. He would do like Micro Machine commercials, and he would do commercials. He was on Saved by the Bell as one of their teachers, but he only had the same bit, which is that he talked fast. Although I would say that he doesn't talk fast, he just doesn't put spaces in between words. And he does everything monotone. Jazz, who's here played by Scatman Crothers, the whole base transforms and arms itself, which is very cool animation. Like everything sort of changes. It's interesting, like you forget the scale until you see a human, because then when you see like Dan, it's like, oh right, these guys are all fucking giant. Like you don't like it's easy to forget that scale. Oh, who said, I don't know who says this line, but somebody says, I've got better things to do tonight than die.
Oh, Chef's Kiss. That's one of my favorite Transformers. That's Springer. He's another triple changer. He can turn into a car and a helicopter. So, you know, it's funny. I was wondering if you noticed this, but essentially they have like a Luke, Han, and Leia love triangle thing going on in this movie, like very A New Hope, where Springer is essentially Han Solo, RC is Princess Leia, and I feel like that's the most obvious one because like her
He has
design,
buns, basically, yeah.
right. And then Hot Rod is essentially like Luke, right?
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
No, I did not catch any of that. Although I did notice that her design looked like Leia's braids.
Yeah. And it's so funny. I mean, I don't know if we're gonna have a chance to fit this in anywhere, but I think for your show, this would be an important thing to point out. But like with Transformers, originally with the cartoon, like gender wasn't really an issue. Romance wasn't an issue, especially on the first two seasons. There just was the idea that like there wasn't necessarily female Transformers, or like they wouldn't focus on female Transformers at all, because the people that were in charge were like, yeah, they're not going to want to play with a girl
Right. And
version
they
of the
never made
trans.
an RC toy, right? Or not until many, many, many years later.
Exactly. And there's female Transformers in the original cartoon too. But it's like there's only like one episode that has them on Cybertron, and there's not like a whole bunch. It's not like some sort of Amazonian tribe. There's just a handful of them.
If they didn't have, like, you could, without the female coded one, you could just say, like, okay, it's a society of all men, or it's a society that's really non-gendered. But adding in one female is kind of like Smurfette. It's kind of like, wait, so it raises more questions than it answers to be like, no, there's one female. It's like, so do they all want to fuck this one girl? Like, what's
Yeah.
the situation?
Yeah, and see, like I thought that this might be good for your channel, because of the stuff that we usually talk about and what I hear you talk about in general. But like there's always different interpretations of how Transformers are made, right? There's so many different versions of Transformers over the years, whether it's comics, movies, cartoon. And in the original show, they kind of say that the Quintessons who we meet in this movie, like that they made them. Right, as like workers, like drones. And so there's no idea, there's no reason to be like, oh, well, there's men and there's women, and that like they procreate with each other. There's nothing like that whatsoever. There's never, ever in any version, like when a girl transformer and a boy transformer fall in love, they make a baby transformer. There's nothing like that ever. But what happens over time is it gets more and more complicated. And in the comics, the one that I was telling you about, like written by James Roberts, this British guy, there's a lot of like homosexual transformers.
Oh,
There's a
interesting.
lot of and there's actually like different types of relationships and stuff. Transformers, like the main impetus, like the main reason why they do things in the cartoon is because they're all trying to get Energon, which is like their food source. It's like the whole way they survive is Energon. That's a big thing in Transformers 1 as well, and not so much in this movie, which is interesting, but they have like Energon inside of them, and then they have like a soul essentially in many versions, and it's called their spark. And so what'll happen is a character can give like a sample of like their innermost Energon, like a little bit of their inner fluid to another Transformer. Not sexually, they don't like come on them, but like they just give it to them in a little vial, and that's almost like the equivalent of being like, here's my heart, or like, here's my wedding ring. And that'll happen between like male characters. There's female transformers that are like lesbians. And you know, and then there's male and female that like each other in the comics as well. But that's actually the most rare kind in the
Wow,
comics.
that's really fascinating.
Yeah.
Well, oh, so now in the film we have the fight. Optimus Prime shows up. This is when Touch plays, right?
This is when the touch plays, yes.
He shows up and he's like, Megatron must be stopped no matter the cost, which is kind of a telegraphing what's going to happen, but I'm sure no
Yes.
kid got that.
Right.
They start fighting, and I gotta say the animation between in their fight is really good because you really feel the intention of they really want to kill each other. They're real. Like you really feel it.
Yes.
Compare that to the Michael Bay films where, the joke, which is true, is that like you can never see what the fuck's going on in Michael Bay movies. You're like, what's happening? Like it's just nothing going on.
Yeah.
The fight is really good. Megatron's like, I'll rip out your optics, like I'll rip out your eyes.
Yes.
Now Hot Rod is like, I gotta help Optimus, and Cup is like, no, let him, that's their fight, let him do it. And
Right.
then Megatron is down,
Yeah.
and there's a gun that he wants to reach for that Optimus can't see. So he's kind of like trying to buy time a little bit. And he's like, oh, he's like begging for his life to buy time. And he's like, he says something about like, you with no mercy, beg for mercy. And then Hot Rod jumps in. Now, what I've learned over the last week, deep diving into this, is that a
Yeah.
lot of fans blame Hot Rod for Optimus Prime's death. That if he had not jumped in, he wouldn't have fucked shit up. How do you
Yeah.
feel about this?
Yes. I mean, rightfully so. You get like really, really frustrated with Hot Rod in that moment. You're like, God damn it. I don't want to be like my co-host for my other show and just like kind of dominate this conversation. I could easily talk by myself for 3 hours. I'm gonna try to pace myself, but one thing I want to point out is that sequence when Optimus like comes to fight Megatron. It's like this weird thing. Like when you're a kid, it feels like you're like, oh my God, like I'm allowed to see this. Like this is so amazing. Like one thing that's missing from movies in general, and maybe kids experience this, but I doubt they do, is there's times in movies when we were kids where you'd see something and you're like, I can't believe they made this. Like, this is incredible. This is like the best fucking thing. And the original Star Wars trilogy is filled with moments like that, right? This moment when Optimus like shows up, the music is so perfect, it's so perfectly timed. And then he does stuff where you're like, he's never done anything like that in the fucking show. Like he drives up like the truck, then he like kind of explodes into the air. Then while he's in the air, he like shoots down at the Decepticons, and it's just this like iconic. It's like he's like a gymnast flying through the air, shooting them. It syncs up with the music perfectly. There's a part where one of the Decepticons turns and like looks at him, and he sees the grill of the truck, and he's reflected in the grill of the truck, and then he's hit. It's just like you're like you can't believe what you're watching. And I bring all this up because someone did a YouTube video of this like a couple of days ago that I thought was just perfect. Where they're like saying to Optimus, like their character on the sidelines talking to Optimus, and they're like, "Hey man, like you're a pretty good marksman. Like you Megatron's like 5 feet away. You could probably hit him and not hit Hot Rod. Like you just like flew in the air and shot five guys perfectly. Like so they're kind of explaining the logistics of like Optimus could have easily shot Megatron even with him holding because he's holding Hot Rod to the side too, and
It's
his
not like
whole
he's in
body.
front of him.
Right. But obviously, like for the plot to work, he has to kind of have this moment where he can't shoot, and then Megatron just fucking blasts him. And one thing I kind of wanted to ask you too, so that I stop talking, is don't you feel like Optimus takes so much punishment, and Megatron actually doesn't take that much, and so it's weird that like Optimus dies. That part's not weird. But the part that's weird is that like Megatron is also like critically damaged by the end of their fight,
Well, it's brutal. They're both in brutal shape. Like it, and like it sucks that Optimus dies, but they both would have died. Like if I think if Megatron's not only dying, but then Starscream throws his body out of a fucking the train ship that they're on. So
After training,
had he not met Unicron, he would have just died alone in space. So both of them have pretty. It says something pretty brutal about like leadership or any of that shit. I mean,
Brian likes to justify it by he says that like maybe Megatron like took a lot of damage prior to his fight with Optimus because they do this one part that they have these amazing speeches. Optimus says one shall stand, one shall fall. That's something that they quote in the movies, like the live action movies, a lot. Megatron says this one line, I would have waited an eternity for this. It's over prime. He's holding the gun on him. And when he says that, the camera kind of focuses on him and you see sort of like the cracks in his metal and stuff. So it looks like he's taking a lot of damage. But when you watch the fight, like Megatron like whips out like a lightsaber and like slashes Optimus in the side. He throws like a piece of metal that gets embedded in Optimus's side. Then he shoots him like four times with that gun, too. So like when Optimus does that thing where he says never and he hits Megatron, they both look very, very haggard and like injured. at that point.
Yeah. The animation is really going for it.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel for even Megatron. Like, they have that brutal scene after where they're like, oh, there's too much weight on the ship. We have to throw some, this is Decepticons. We have to throw some people overboard. And then they're like, Starscream's like, every man for themselves.
Right.
And then who's for me? And then all the people alive say yay. And then all the like the sick dying people go nay, which is kind of
Right.
itself darkly humorous. And then
Amazing. Yeah.
he opens up like the door to throw Megatron out, and Megatron goes, I still function.
Yes.
And he's like, fuck you, and he just throws him out.
It's so incredible. And I just always remember this moment as a kid. He says, I still function. And he says, wanna bet? And he just like lets him fly out into space. It's so good. I mean, but there's a few other things I wanted to mention because I think they're so important. Like when Optimus knocks him off that high point and he falls, the music is so dramatic. It's like, it's like, oh my God, this is this amazing moment. But then Optimus like staggers, then he falls over, and there's this kind of hollow metallic sound. And I think that really seals that scene. When he falls over, you're like, oh, this is not good, right? And then like all the Decepticons are retreating, Cup says, he did it, he jammed the tide or whatever. RC says the Decepticons are retreating. So it's like obviously like Optimus was the factor that changed everything. And that plays into all the media after this, where Optimus Prime becomes this sort of like he's the factor. He's the one that like if he's in the battle, the good guys are gonna win, right? But in this scene, he dies, and Starscream immediately takes over. He's like, "We're getting the fuck out of here, Astro Train, transform and take us out of here." And like Megatron's like, S "Oh no, wait, I'm sorry, dude, I gotta say this part because I fucking quote this part all the time, and I love it." Like Starscream walks over to him and he says, "How do you feel, mighty Megatron?" And he just kicks him on the ground. Fucking love that part. I quote that to my kids and I'll kick them sometimes. Yeah, there's that sense of like that there's some Decepticons that are just like truly fucked up, and then there's some that are okay. And then they just basically just shed them like Hasbro shed the toys at that point, you know?
It's people always talk about like, oh, well, these are toy commercials and stuff, and that's true, for modern, contemporary media too. But I always think about like there are artists and artisans working in all this stuff. You know what I mean? Even the most like, something that you think would have no integrity because it's a toy commercial, there's still some artist who's putting their all into it, and I feel like that's really interesting. And no matter what you think about like things like this or Masters of the Universe, there's amazing creativity happening from the people who are putting it together. And despite what Transformers is meant to be in the eyes of like Hasbro, like this movie goes for it. Like really is like, this is a movie, these are characters, we want you to feel things for these characters. I think that's maybe where we get this weird issue, because I think Hasbro didn't want to traumatize children, right? Hasbro was probably just like, yeah, get rid of the old ones and bring in new ones. And then it was the artist and writer who was like, okay, well, I mean, if Optimus Prime is gonna die, I have to make it dramatic. And that's when you end up having this movie like this. And
Yes.
we're at Optimus Prime's death scene now.
Yes.
He's like on like a, I guess like a gurney. I don't know what he's on, like some slab, and he's like dying.
Yeah.
He gives the Matrix of Leadership to Ultra Magnus.
Right, correct, correct. Yes. And there's like foreshadowing that's like so like on the nose, it's ridiculous. Like Optimus drops the Matrix because he's dying. Hot Rod catches it and he like holds it up, but then like there's this gigantic blue flash of light and he's holding it like this, so it's like, oh, I wonder who's really gonna get the Matrix, right? And we should really point out that the score is by Vince DiCola, and he's the one that made that Unicron theme, which is so amazing. And he took the Transformers theme and like made it more dramatic. The music is so effective in this scene because when Optimus actually dies, there's some dialogue prior to it, but then there's no dialogue. And they show like his eyes kind of flickering out. And then it just goes dun 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 dun, and it's like so like final and dramatic, and
Yeah.
he turns black, and then his
Yeah,
head
she's
just
really
turns.
interesting. Yeah.
Like, you know, we should point out too that one of the things that sucks about the Michael Bay movies is that like all the Decepticons are kind of just like gray and
Yeah.
metallic looking, whereas the Autobots do have color. But like on in the cartoon, like both sides have like multiple colors, and they're
Yeah,
so
yeah.
interesting. And it's interesting in this movie because there's at least two deaths where characters die and they become this sort of like ashen gray thing, you
Yeah.
know? And here's a funny thing. Man, I'm just talking so much, but like Brian has a toy of like blackened dead Optimus Prime, you
Nice.
know?
That's
Yeah.
fun.
Right.
So let's see. Oh, so another big moment in this movie is the oh, where is it? When Spike says shit. What does he say?
He says, "Oh shit, it didn't even dent him, or like it
Oh,
didn't even
yeah.
dent it." Yeah.
So, do you remember your reaction to that?
I think like for the first few viewings, I didn't even notice, and then you notice it, you know, at first you're like, "Oh my God, he says shit." It feels weird. It's once again, you kind of feel like you're like, "Am I allowed to be seeing this?" Like
Yeah.
that's, you know, out of nowhere. So it's like the one curse in the movie. I think in some versions, he doesn't even say that, you
Yeah,
know.
it's a wonder to me that Hasbro was like fine with that. It
It's
stands
funny. The
out in
fans
a
love it.
weird
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
way. It
But you
reminds
don't
me,
like see his mouth when he says it. Like you're looking at an image of Unicron like eating the moon. Yeah.
There are other moments like this in pop culture. Like, I don't know if you, did you ever watch Star Trek Discovery?
Is it what the girl says, "Holy fuck, that's cool," or something like
Yeah,
that?
yeah. Like it like she says fuck, and then earlier this year, in Andor, somebody says rape.
Yeah.
And people were bothered by that. Some people loved it. Some people were like, it's good to show that. Some people were like, I don't know if the word, I want to hear the word rape in my Star Wars. It's always an interesting thing. But again, it's a bold move amongst bold moves,
Yeah.
in this movie.
Right.
We're running out of time, so I want to get to like big things in the narrative. I want to talk about Starscream's death,
Yes.
and I want to talk a little bit about the quintessence in that whole sequence.
Sure. Yeah, of course. It's all gold. Maybe we should talk about Unicron a little bit too.
Yeah, let's.
Starscream's death, it comes pretty soon after that. Basically, we have that whole sequence where Unicron changes Megatron and a couple of the Seekers, those are like the jet ones, and the Insecticons, those are the bug ones,
Yeah.
changes them into Scourge and Cyclonus and stuff, and Megatron into Galvatron, right? That sequence in itself is so crazy because Unicron is just like he doesn't care about Megatron at all. He's just like, you know, whatever, you're nothing to me. And the dialogue is kind of complex for a kid's movie. He
Yeah.
at one point says, "Your bargaining postures are highly dubious," you know, and it's like,
Yeah.
what the fuck? Like a kid's not gonna get that at all.
Yeah.
And then when he changes Megatron, it's so crazy because like essentially they do this effect where Megatron's character, like you see the inside of him and he's like glowing. It's in this purple light. And you see like his eyes, you know, optics or whatever and his internal stuff. And then it turns into Megatron. Galvatron. I always thought that was really cool.
Yeah.
And then essentially to show that Galvatron is this badass, like he murders, cold-blooded murders Starscream, you know?
Yes. And Starscream has he's accepted the mantle of the leader. He's like having a coronation, and then he shows up. He turns into like a laser cannon,
Right.
and fucking murders him. Yeah.
I mean, it's funny because like one of the most consistent things on the cartoon was that Starscream would always want to be the leader of the Decepticons. And like anytime like Megatron like stubbed his toe or something, Starscream would be like, "Oh, he's hurt. I'm going to be in the leader now," right? So in
Right.
this movie, he finally gets it. It's so over the top. He's gonna like put a fucking crown on his head. And then Galvatron shows up and blasts him, and it's like it is almost like slow motion where we just watch his body turn gray and then just collapse in on itself,
Yeah.
And then the crown rolls on the ground, and I always felt like this was such a dramatic effect. But like Galvatron like steps on the crown, and he says, "Does any would anyone like to take his place or anything like that?" And then nobody else wants to. That always bothered me as a kid, but it's a really epic scene, you know?
It also shows something about their ideology. Like
Yeah.
they have no community. They have no togetherness. It's all like whoever is the strongest survives.
Right, exactly.
So at one point in the film, our cast like splits into two different places. Half of them go to this junk planet, which is beautiful looking. I mean, really great animation, where they meet Eric Idle, who like talks in like TV rhetoric.
Yeah.
I saw some YouTube video this week that was like, this is a meta commentary on the fact that it was based on toys, and this is the artist saying "fuck you" to Hasbro. I don't know if that's true, but it's an interesting reading. And
Right.
then the others go to this Quintesson planet. Well, that's Culp and Cup, the older one, and Hot Rod, and they're like having these like these mock like kangaroo court trials where there's a judge that has like three faces, kind of like Manny faces from He-Man. And
Right.
I don't get this bit. Every time he says you they're innocent, they are executed. I don't
Yeah.
understand the joke there.
Yeah, it's bizarre. The person I was watching it with, she was like, "Wait a minute, didn't she, they just say innocent?" But I think the idea is like, it doesn't matter what the verdict's going to be; they're just going to feed them to the Sharktacons, you know? Yeah. That Quintesson planet, Quintessa, has two amazing musical moments. There's the part where Hot Rod wakes up underwater, and it's this like whole biome of like robotic fish and stuff floating around, and it's amazing.
Beautiful,
And
yeah.
it's playing the song "Nothing's Gonna Stand in Our Way," which I feel like in this sequence, maybe the music is the most perfectly synced up with imagery. I love that fucking sequence. Then there's the part where Cup and Hot Rod get to be fed to the Sharktacons, and they say like, "Oh, we don't have enough blasters to take them out." And they're like, "Well, let's give them. We're gonna do like a roller derby or something like that. Demolition derby. Let's give them a repair bill they can't afford." I'm totally fucking up the lines because I'm trying to get through this quick, but they have this great battle sequence, and then the fucking Dinobots show up, and I love that. There's a song playing called "Hunger." It's so good, and the Dinobots, they're characters that are from previous seasons, but what happened was there's certain characters that they did not discontinue their toy line, so they don't kill them. So like, the Dinobots make it through because they were so popular. And then there's like certain Decepticons and stuff that are so popular, like Soundwave and stuff, where they don't get killed either because they didn't discontinue their toys.
Interesting. The Dinobots we hadn't talked about before are very cool. They play a good role in this. Although it leads into a theory that I have, which maybe I'll talk about in our next episode, and I want to get your take on it. We got to talk about Dare to Be Stupid, an original piece from the great Weird Al Yankovic, not a parody of another song. And Dare to Be Stupid is played in a moment where like I don't, what do you call the people that live on the junk planet?
Junkions.
Junkions. They like, I guess they are menacing at first, or they think they're menacing, and then eventually, like, they kind of all make friends, and then they dance to Dare to
Yes.
Be Stupid.
Yes.
It's a lot of fun.
I thought that you might point out this scene because I think maybe this might have been the first time I noticed this. I noticed this before, but like Hot Rod and Wreck-Gar, that's Eric Idle's character, dance together. And it's kind of homosexual, you know, because it's like these two male robots dancing. And when you watch, you're like, okay, they're just kind of dancing together. They show them close up. Then there's like a shot where they pull back and it's like you see all these characters dancing together. And it looks like, I think like Hot Rod is like dipping Wreck-Gar, like a, you know, like a man would dip a woman when they're dancing with them.
Beautiful.
Or, you know, anyone of any gender would do that. But like, you know, primarily we would see a man dipping a woman, right? And so I just that stood out this time when I was watching that.
No, it and it's great animation.
Yeah, that whole sequence gets started by they say this thing called the universal greeting, "Ba weep grana weep ninny bomb," and that they play that twice in this movie. That's the first time you see that is in this movie. But like that's the thing that like Transformers fans will laugh if they hear someone saying that or referencing that. Yeah.
I guess let's just go to the ending.
Yeah. Do
Or
you want to
whatever
talk
you want
about
to
like
talk about. I mean, there's a couple other big moments. Unicron transforms into a gigantic humanoid figure. Hot Rod becomes Rodimus Prime.
Yes. Yeah. So we should just talk about Unicron in general. So Unicron was made for this movie, and like I said, there's many different takes on how the Transformers came to be, where they come from, who made them, all this kind of stuff. One thing that got established in the comics that this movie sort of they took this movie and they ran with it was essentially that like Unicron is like a dark god for the Transformers, and he's actually from like another plane of existence, and then he comes into this universe, right? His equivalent, his like good version, is Primus, which we're going to talk about in the other movie. But Primus essentially is like the equivalent of Unicron, where Unicron is this like planet, but he's also a robot. Primus is a planet, but he's also a robot, and he's Cybertron. So he's like the father of the Transformers. Okay. Yeah. And so they don't talk about Primus in this movie at all. But that sequence where Unicron transforms, like the whole thing is the Matrix is like the MacGuffin, right? The Matrix is the thing that can destroy Unicron. That's why he changes Megatron to Galvatron to get the Matrix. Then, of course, when Galvatron has the Matrix, he's like, I'm gonna fucking use this and control you. And then Unicron's like, no, you're not. And he transforms. And I always felt like the animation in that sequence might have been like the best in the whole movie when he
Yeah, it's great.
transforms.
Yeah, it's
And
very
it's
good.
so dramatic. You really get this sense of scale when
Yes,
he
you do.
transforms.
Yeah,
Yeah.
yeah. No, it's great. And they're like almost like the Death Star, like there's characters inside of him doing all sorts of things. We find out that some of the characters that had been captured before are like on some weird like assembly line. They're all gonna be like thrown into like vats of acid or some shit.
Yeah.
It's really cool. Well, listen,
Yeah.
we gotta, yeah.
Oh, well, no, I want to make one point real quick and then we can wrap it up. Absolutely. But I remember I was watching a person's commentary on it, these two guys, and Brian and I actually recorded a commentary on this once, but it got lost on my old computer. But this guy said, Unicron is essentially the Emperor and the Death Star in one. And I
That's,
thought that was a great.
yeah, that is an interesting point. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
Listen, there's more to talk about. Come back next week. We're going to be talking more about Transformers. Pete, thank you so much for being here. We end every episode by saying,
Go bye-bye.